You are listening to Dauber Prospects Radio, Episode 20. We are reviewing the Memorial Cup. We talk about the 2017 Fantasy Prospects Report and get some thoughts on the Draft Combine and NHL Draft from Adam Kimmelman of the DraftCast podcast and NHL.com. So let's get started. Hey everybody, Paul Zwombeck here. Welcome to Episode 20 of Dauber Prospects Radio, the best and only fantasy hockey program dedicated to hockey prospects. The DPR show is produced every other week for your enjoyment, and show notes are found at dauberprospects.com. Come back often and feel free to subscribe to our show on iTunes. You can also follow us on Twitter at @DPR_show. I am, as always, joined by my co-host, Peter Harling, managing editor of dauberprospects.com. Peter, did you enjoy the Memorial Cup?
Loved it. What great hockey that is, huh? I mean, the intensity in some of those games and lots of goal scoring. It's a bittersweet though, because now the junior season is officially over. We can look forward to the draft, of course. We're going to that, but yeah, that was a great tournament. What was your thoughts?
I found it very fantastic. I really did think the Spitfires were going to do well in the tournament. They seemed like they got put out a little earlier than they should have been in the OHL playoffs, but they went up against a buzzsaw London Knights, so they had a tough out. I picked the Spitfires in my head. I didn't put it out anywhere on Twitter or anything, but I picked the Spitfires to win the tournament. So let's congratulate the Windsor Spitfires. You're 2017 Memorial Cup champions. That's quite a hard task going up against the CHL champions.
Yeah, there's a lot of I saw some pushback on the Memorial Cup format saying that I thought it was a tournament for champions and blah, blah, blah. It's like, look, man, they beat three league champions, including the powerhouse Erie Otters, twice. It's full value for the win. I don't have a problem with the host team winning it. And like you said, sure, they went out in the first round of the playoffs, so they won the Memorial Cup without winning a single playoff round. And, you know, on the surface, that does look a little erroneous, but when you watch them play, you can't take anything away from the first-round series that they had against the London Knights. So, yes, congratulations, well-earned victory. All my respects to the Windsor Spitfires and their well-earned victory.
Yeah, them getting healthy definitely helped, and those 40-plus days off really, really helped their team get healthy, because they were a very unhealthy team pretty much throughout the season and into playoffs. So I think the health was a key factor there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Getting healthy for the first time in the whole entire season. Sure did make a difference. So let's talk about some of the players that we liked in the tournament. And let's start with the hosts and the champs, the Windsor Spitfires. I really liked what I saw from Leafs prospect Jeremy Bracco. He's really able to drive the offense. He elevates his game in big game events. He started off the season with a monster point streak, 27 games in a row. He scored 51 points in that span. Then he went to the World Juniors with the Americans, and he was an impact player for them, and they won the gold medal. Then he was traded from Kitchener to Windsor, and with Windsor, he's obviously gone on now to win the Memorial Cup. So just an absolutely fantastic final season of junior for this guy. I'm really looking forward to him turning pro next year with the Toronto organization. They recently signed him to his ELC, and all signs indicate that he'll be making his debut with the Marlies. So I'll be able to get to watch him live in the AHL next season. And he's a player that, if he's available in your fantasy leagues, what are you waiting for? Pick him up. Yeah, he's undersized and whatnot, and you'll have to sit him on your bench for a while. But, the way the NHL is trending right now, with all about skill and skating and speed and smarts, and this guy's got it all in spades. Did you see how he set up that game-winning goal, how he used his skating and agility, going heel-to-heel the way he does? Create separation from the pressure that was on him and find a lane to set the puck up for a wide open guy in front of the net. Just that's big league material right there, to be able to create that kind of time and space. So he's a player that really stood out to me for Windsor. I liked his game, and I can't wait to see what he does next.
Yeah, how many years away do you think he is from making the Leafs?
One.
One? Like, you think he has one AHL year and then the next year he's making the lineup?
Yeah, that would be my guess. I mean, it could be faster. I thought this season that Mitch Marner would start the year in Toronto, and then, you know, see his ice time diminish as the season wore on and the games got tougher, and then maybe get loaned to Canada and then finish the season with the London Knights for another Memorial Cup run. But obviously that never even came close to happening. He was one of their best players for the whole entire season. So, you know, Bracco could do the same thing. I'm not saying that he's as good as Marner. It's probably pretty close, but I definitely think Marner is a much better player. Bracco could end up being like maybe a third line winger and power play specialist. But yeah, I think at this point he's got minor eligibility. And last year Marner didn't. It was the NHL or nothing for Marner.
Yeah, I think that's what helped Marner to make the Leafs, and I think that's what's going to hurt Bracco for not making the Leafs this coming year, because they do have a kind of similar gameplay. Like, they both can just find lanes out of nowhere, and I think Marner is good. His rookie year is going to be far better than Bracco's rookie year, but I think Bracco's still going to be that guy that can produce whenever he does make it into the lineup.
Yeah, and, you know, Babcock comes from Detroit, where they slow cooked their prospects in the minors, and I don't see anything wrong with that. And if he ends up playing a year plus in the AHL, that's fine too. You know, when he's ready and forces his way onto the Leafs roster, that's when it'll happen.
Yeah, I feel like the Babcock slow cooking the prospects, I think that's more of Ken Holland and the Red Wings organization, because he definitely did not slow cook rookies this year in Toronto, but he had a great rookie core to not slow cook. So maybe he gets back to that, take the time with the prospects, because he's got his big three young kids, Nylander, Marner, and Matthews. But I have a feeling Bracco, he might even get cups of coffee next year, that he might get into the lineup if one of those higher end guys goes down and they need a point producing guy.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Preseason games, absolutely. And then, you know, probably a game or two in the beginning of the season, and then assign him to Toronto. And absolutely, I could see him getting a couple cups of coffee. And I wouldn't be surprised if Babcock adopted that philosophy from Detroit and brought it with him. But of all the Leafs rookies that they forced into the roster this year, all of them were ready, right? So, like I said about Bracco, when he's ready, he'll force his way on to the roster. So it's really in his hands.
Yeah, a guy that I really enjoyed watching in the Memorial Cup, and I think he raised his draft stock. I don't know how much more he could have done it before the first game of the Memorial Cup, but Gabe Vilardi, he might be my number three forward after Patrick and Hischier, and I'm targeting him in a lot of my fantasy hockey leagues. I really want this kid on my team. I will reach for him if I have a third overall, or if I can climb into a third overall after Patrick and Hischier, because other guys think that the talent kind of falls off. I want this kid on pretty much every one of my teams.
Yeah, third overall I don't think is really reaching. Yeah, he was excellent in the tournament. He's so strong on the puck. He's got such a heavy stick. It's so difficult to strip him of the puck. And he just holds on to possession and drives possession in the offensive zone, and that creates momentum and pressure and draws guys out of position. And then, you know, not only is he physically strong and able to protect the puck like that, and, you know, he's got great edge work, he's got great vision. So when guys bite on, you know, jumping out of position to chase him down or track him down or even draw a penalty or whatever, he's got the vision to spot the open man and then the skill to zip it right across to him. So that all translates really well to the NHL.
Yeah, I don't think he lost a puck possession behind the opposing net. Like, anytime he was behind the net, he came out with the puck or came out with a pass to set up Jeremiah Addison pretty much on all of their goals. He's not a big goal scorer, so if you want goals in your fantasy hockey league, he's not going to put up 30 goals. He's going to be an assist machine. He's a setup guy for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, another draft-eligible player with Windsor that I think probably raised his stock would be the goaltender, Michael DiPietro. I mean, here's a guy who was off for, what was it, 40-some days, and then he gets dropped into a tournament with three league champions, the best caliber hockey. It's a tournament dominated by older players, right? Like 19 and 20-year-old players, and he's a 17-year-old goalie. And he was dialed in, huh? And he was just unshakable. I mean, he got really lucky a lot. They hit a lot of posts. And there was a play where, you know, DeBrincat had a bit of a tap into the side of the net, the kind of thing that he never misses. And he hit the side of the net instead of burying it. So, you know, you got to be good to be lucky and lucky to be good. And, you know, it comes down to a two-horse race for the top goalie overall, in my opinion, between DiPietro and Ottinger. And we can ask our guest, Adam Kimmelman, at the end of the show, who he ranks top. But for me, I think it's DiPietro. Maybe that's just a bias because I've seen him play more often than I have Ottinger. But I really liked what I saw under tremendous pressure and high, high stakes. And he seems to have the mental toughness that what I look for in a goalie. That was my takeaway from DiPietro. What do you think?
I am a huge fan of this kid. I was beating the drum at the beginning of the year that he's the number one goalie in the draft, and I'm sticking by that. I still think he's gonna go number one as the goalie, not in the first round. I think he'll be a second or third round, but so much pressure on this kid. He's from the Windsor area. He's the host underdog. He's a young kid compared to these 20-year-olds, and just dominated the tournament. They had some pretty decent goalies in this tournament, and he surpassed all of them. Like, Calen Booth is not a slouch. Troy Timpano, he's not great, but he had a pretty good year. And then Carl Stankowski, the even younger kid, just kind of folded, but we'll get onto his case a little bit later. But DiPietro just, I'm a big fan, and again, I'm going to target this kid. I'm going to have a lot of Spitfires on my prospect teams this year.
Yeah, I think you're right about where he slots in the draft in the second round, and there could be a little mini run on goalies early to mid second round with Ottinger and DiPietro at the top of the heap there, and then you've got the Finnish guy I talked about on the special edition with Marco, and I actually pronounced his name right, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen. I think those are the top three goalies, and but it's a deep draft for goalies. But getting back to Windsor, we talked a lot at the early episodes of this show, which was around the rookie camp and training camps and the start of the season. And we gave a lot of lip service and airtime to Mikhail Sergachev. And I was really impressed with what I saw from him at the Habs rookie camp. And he dominated a rookie game against the Sens. And he started the season in the NHL. He played one game with the Habs, and then they sent him back to junior. And I think he suffered a little bit from NHLitis when he got back to Windsor, because he looked pretty disinterested right up pretty much until the World Juniors. I think the World Junior Tournament is what kind of sparked his engine again and got him going. But he was full value in this tournament, I thought. He was very good on both sides of the puck. He had that great shot from the point. He hit the post in the final game, I believe it was. I thought he had a strong tournament, and I'm pretty confident that he's going to be on the Habs blue line next year. What do you think about that? You think he's going to?
I really hope he is on the Habs blue line. I think it'd crush his morale and his confidence if they don't have him on the Habs team next year because of how they dealt with him this year. That Windsor Spitfires back end defense core is pretty underrated. Like, Logan Stanley may not be a fantasy guy. We harp on him a lot. He's the Logan Stanley rule of don't draft the guy because he goes high in the NHL draft, in your fantasy draft. But he could put up a lot of peripherals if you have a league that has a lot of hits and block shots and shots. And he's got a big shot on the back end. It's not a great shot, but he can load it up and fire one. And then Sean Day has just kind of fallen into the shadows. He had the exceptional status in the OHL and kind of fell off in Mississauga, and then he went to Windsor and he won himself a Memorial Cup. So that's really nice to see from the Rangers prospect.
Yeah, you're right. We do give Logan Stanley a really bum rap in a lot of conversations where we use him as the example of why you don't use the NHL draft list for your fantasy prospect draft. And it's true in a points-only league, but to your point, it's true. He'll get you some good peripheral stats, a lot of blocks, a lot of hits. And I went to the Windsor game in Peterborough this year, and he was one of the healthy players in the game. They were missing half their team. But the offense on the back end wasn't going through him, but he was getting power play time, and he was getting shots through. He does have a heavy shot. It's just it's a musket. It takes him forever to load it. You know, he's got to put the shot in, then he's got to put the gunpowder in, and then he's got to get a little pipe cleaner and poke it all, pack it all down, and then he's got to light the match, and then he can shoot it. So if he can increase his release time and get that shot off a lot faster and have it be maybe a little bit more accurate too, he's a little bit Dion Phaneuf rangy, but he's not without hope offensively. I'll say that. Another defenseman, you talked about Sean Day. He was great. Man, can that guy skate or what? Chatfield, Vancouver Canucks, undrafted free agent signing. He'll be turning pro this year, so he'll likely report to Utica. He's a good defensive defenseman. Not a lot of fantasy upside in terms of points, but he could be good for peripherals if you're in a really, really deep league. But I would maybe put him on your watch list for that, and maybe not add him to your roster for now. Anyone else on Windsor, or should we move on to the Otters?
No, I think we should move on to the always a bridesmaid, never a bride, Erie Otters. Some of these kids have played on solid teams for the past 4 years. Like, Dylan Strome's got to be kicking himself that he's had great Erie Otter teams to play on and never brought home the cup. That's got to be hurtful. I feel really bad for the Erie Otters.
Yeah, he looked like he got just his guts ripped out when that game ended and he was on the ice. He just dropped to his knees. It's hard to watch, you know, as exciting as these championship games are, Stanley Cup, Memorial Cup, World Juniors, you've got such a range of emotion, right? Like one team's got to win and one team's got to lose. And the elation on one side where everyone is like jumping out of their skin and their eyeballs are popping out and they're hooting and hollering. And the other end, you got guys that are just like crying their eyes out at the other end of the ice. It's a lot of drama in sports. And I think that's one of the main reasons why we all like it. But yeah, how about the Erie Otters and Dylan Strome? He's going to go pro next year for sure. He's going to make it onto Arizona Coyotes, and he'll be joined by another rookie. They're going to be this year's Toronto Maple Leafs, Clayton Keller, Dylan Strome. Two players that'll be, I think, competing for a potential Rookie of the Year trophy from Arizona next year.
Yeah, I agree 100% with that.
Yeah, these are players that, you know, if you're not in the deeper leagues, they're probably available because, you know, they're outside the NHL, but they'll be in it next year and they'll be revamping the Arizona Coyotes. I think they're going to get a jump up in the standings from where they were last year. Taylor Radish had a really good series too. He was right up there with Strome in scoring. He's second round pick from last summer. He's come on. He had a great season, man. And he wasn't even on the radar, I don't think, for Team Canada. And then his play this season was so great. He was leading the OHL in goal scoring. And then they had the Canada-Russia Subway Series. It's not called Subway anymore. Super Series. And yeah, two games, scored a goal, worked his way onto Team Canada roster, made it to the World Juniors, had a almost 50-goal season, I want to say. It was 40-something. And looked great in the playoffs for Erie, and then also again looked great for Erie in the Memorial Cup. He was scoring goals, scoring power play goals. I think Tampa's got themselves a really great value pick, picking him up in the second round.
Yeah, last episode we talked about how good Tampa Bay Lightning prospects are and how many were still playing last week when we recorded. Can you believe the top seven scoring leaders in the Memorial Cup six of them were Erie Otters. Yeah, it helps they blew the socks off the Sea Dogs, but that's two full lines. One was a defenseman, Darren Radish, who, again, every NHL GM, pick up your phone and call his agent. Like, how has he not signed his ELC?
Yeah, I don't know. We talk about that every episode. It is incredible. And that top line of Erie with Strom, Radish, and DeBrincat, especially when they're on the power play, it's like watching the Harlem Globetrotters. I hear Sweet George Brown in the background when they're just passing it around. When they came through Kingston gave them about three or four power plays, and I don't think any of the power plays went over a minute before Erie cashed in and scored. It's just dominant.
Yeah, it just goes to show how good the Spitfires played, that they were able to really shut those guys down. They didn't completely shut them down, but they quieted them quite a bit.
Yeah, Warren Fogle's another player, just to go to their depth. I think Anthony Cirelli, but Warren Fogle, I'm pretty familiar with him, having played in Kingston for a year and a half. He was a late scratch from Carolina's training camp last year, and he's turning pro for sure. Probably playing with Charlotte Checkers in the AHL. But I wouldn't dismiss the possibility that maybe not at the start of the year, but he'll probably get more than a cup of coffee in the NHL this year. And it wouldn't surprise me at all if he finished the season in the NHL next year. So if you don't own Warren Fogle in your fantasy league, or no one owns Warren Fogle, that might be a player that you could get sneaky good value out of for probably nothing.
Yeah, is there anybody else that you want to mention from the Otters?
No, let's go out east and talk about the St. John Sea Dogs.
Yeah, they end up losing in the semifinals to the Erie Otters, 6-3. I think I've said this before, but Thomas Chabot, I know he's great. I understand he can skate and he can produce, but when I guess it's just the games that I watch or that I catch highlights of and stuff. Not a big fan of. I don't know why. I think we talked about this like six episodes ago when we were talking about the Hockey News magazine, how high he was rated, and I thought he should be a little lower. Talk me into this guy, Peter, Thomas Chabot. Why are you a big fan?
Sure. Okay, so we both live in Ontario, so we don't get a lot of exposure to the Q games, but I sure did notice him play with Team Canada at the World Juniors. So he's well over a point per game player in the Q this year with 45 points in 34 games. And he had, I think it was over a point per game as well at the World Juniors. He was just dominant. He's dominant at the OHL level. He controls the play, both sides of the puck. When St. John's has the puck, he's creating offense. He carries it up the ice. He skates well, like you said. On the point, he runs the power play. He's got a great shot. He's got great vision. He moves nicely laterally along the blue line, so he can find all kinds of angles. He's not afraid to pinch in and carry the puck in deep. Defensively, he makes really good read and reacts, good decisions. It's hard to beat him wide because he's such a good skater. He's got such a good reach. He can separate player from puck using, his body and checking guys and rubbing them out along the boards and whatnot. He just does everything very, very well. He projects very well to the NHL level. And, he dominated at the World Juniors against the elite of his age group. And, he also, I think, played one game in the NHL at the start of the season. And I have very little doubt that he's going to start with the Sens in September, and he and Carlson can duke it out for Norris trophies going forward.
Do you think he's going to be a point producer right out of the gates?
No, not at the NHL level. No, the Sens will have to ease him in. I mean, they've got a good blue line, right? Like, where's he going to slot in? The Sens don't really have a lot of turnover coming on the blue line this year. They've got Carlson and Mathot, and then they got Phaneuf and CeCe, so they can. They can ease him in a bottom pairing role to start, but it won't take long for him to earn the trust of the coach and for him to start, making impacts on the game. Once he gets his feet wet in the NHL and gets his confidence there, look out. And as soon as someone gets injured up front, the guy that moves up the depth chart to plug the hole is going to be Thomas Chabot. And they say you don't lose your job to injury, but the fact is you do. And, unless it's Carlson, when they come back from injury, they have a hard time getting their spot back out of Chabot. So it's a really nice situation for the Sens to have, of course. Good depth on their blue line.
Yeah, I think that guy that is going to lose his spot is Cody Ceci. I think he's the most vulnerable of those top four, because they need Phaneuf as a hard-nosed guy on the back end, and Mark Methot as well is that hard-nosed who can still put the puck in scoring areas and help the team out. So I think it's going to be Ceci that's going to be in trouble there. I guess he kind of talks me into it, but I'm still a wait and see. I want him to show that he can do it in the NHL, and then I'll try and jump on board or try and get him from somebody, but I think it's too late for me, and I don't own him in any league, so maybe that's why I'm so stale on him. But I don't know. I think he's a guy that has to prove it for me.
Sure. Who else on St. John's did you like? Because they've got a lot of depth.
Yeah, I really like Joe Valeno. I know he's not until 2018 draft, but I'm putting him near the top of my list for the 2018 draft favorites. So Joe Valeno had a pretty decent tournament for a guy that is playing behind like Matthew Joseph, Julien Gauthier, a number of guys that he's kind of a third or fourth line guy on this Sea Dogs team. So Valeno definitely had a good tournament.
Yeah, he's a clear-cut top prospect for the 2018 draft. Exceptional first player to get exceptional status into the queue. He was injured when St. John's came through this way. I saw them in Gatineau, but Valeno was actually sitting right in front of me. So I asked him why he wasn't playing. He said he had a high ankle sprain, and that would do it. It's obviously cleared up now, because, man, can that guy fly, huh? He was skating up the ice, carrying the puck, excellent puck skills, great vision. He had a good tournament, too. He scored 3 goals. He had 4 points. And again, he's 17 years old, and this is a tournament dominated by 20-year-olds. It's going to be tough for him next year, because they're going to have a lot of turnover in St. John's, and he's going to lose all his high-powered line mates. He'll be the guy there. Like lots to like about Valeno, and the 2018 draft is going to be a good one. So some other players that are leaving St. John's, I think Matthew Joseph and Boko Omama, Julien Gauthier are all graduating. Did you have any thoughts on any of those guys?
I feel like Gauthier kind of gets lost out on the ice. I think he kind of just disappears for a while, and then out of nowhere it's like, oh, Julien Gauthier, you're a man amongst boys, and you're a big guy, and you know how to use your body. I think going to the Carolina Hurricanes is going to help his pro game immensely, because he's got Jordan Staal, who is also a monster of a human being, and has kind of learned how to use his frame to be that powerhouse that can drive the net, and I think Julien Gauthier is going to learn a lot from Jordan Staal.
Yeah, he had a good season. He also made Team Canada, and he scored 5 goals there and 7 points in 7 games. So he was only drafted last year, but he's a late birthday, so he's aged out of junior, and there's no way he's coming back as an overager. There is talk that he might even make the NHL last year right out of his draft because it's a late birthday, and because he's so strong, he's got man strength already. I think probably some seasoning with, there's a big jump from junior hockey to the AHL and then another jump to the NHL. So, allow him some time to adjust to the reduced time and space you have with the puck and the increased speed of the game at the pro level. And then, won't be long before he's in the NHL, though. Driving pucks to the net, setting up camp in front of the goal and lighting the lamp for Carolina. Carolina's done a really great job, haven't they? Of acquiring assets. I mean, when GM Ron Francis took over Carolina, I thought they were kind of a joke.
Yeah.
With not a good team and not a lot coming down the pipe. And since he's taken over, they've done a really great job of not only drafting very well and astutely and developing their players, but signing free agent prospects, taking risks on overage guys like Sebastian Aho, making trades to acquiring prospects and draft picks. And now their cupboard is really full in a short amount of time. It's been a really, I think, underrated performance by Ron Francis.
Yeah, do you think they're a top 10 prospect cupboard? Do you think they got a top 10 in them? Like, top 10 team of best all-around group of prospects?
Yeah, I wouldn't say they have off the top of my head. I think they don't have an individual prospect who's in the top 10 necessarily, but yes, they have excellent depth. They have a lot of players, and they got a young team in the NHL too for the most part, so they're trending in the right direction.
Yeah, and all these kids are going to grow together. Like, they're going to learn to play with each other and feed off of each other. They don't have a lot of like veteran guys that are going to just take ice time from them. They're all just going to grow together, mend and mold together. It should be really interesting to see how they turn out in 3 to 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So some other St. John players that we've talked about them before on the show as well, Matthew Joseph, Boko Amama, the Tampa Bay guys. So let's move on to Seattle. So the WHL champs come in and have a bit of a tough go. I think they only played 3 games. They lost all their games, and they're the first team out. We talked about Karl Stankowski. I was really interested in watching Matthew Brazel. He was limited to only a couple of assists. I'm trying to come up with positives.
Yeah, they were just outclassed. They didn't seem like they really fit with the other three dominating teams. They looked like they were the host underdog team.
Yeah, they really did. I mean, they had a bit of a tough break. A lot of teams really depend on your number one defenseman, right? Like, logs a lot of minutes, drives the offense away from the back end. And in Thunderbird's case, that's Ethan Bear. And he's got a broken hand or fingers or whatever. They had a shot of it and on the bench with his glove off. And his three middle fingers were bound together. So he was gripping his stick with his thumb and his pinky.
Yeah, that's crazy.
That's going to make it hard.
Oh, I'm just holding my hand like that, and it's like, I don't even know if I could do it without a glove on. Hold a stick, like, that'd be tough.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that explains a lot of why they flamed out a little bit. Plus, their regular starting goalie was out all playoffs. And we talked about Stankowski, and, you know, he didn't play all season. And then he comes into the playoffs, and he's just lights out for Seattle, and he's stealing them games. He's got a great goals against average and save percentage. And then, like I said on my prospects ramblings, you know, his Cinderella run comes to an end and turned into a pumpkin in the Memorial Cup, and had a 5.99 goals against average.
Yeah, I feel like we got kind of ripped off that the Regina Pats didn't make it, because I feel like the Regina Pats were just a dominant team all season, and then they ran into Karl Stankowski standing on his head and couldn't come out of the WHL. I really would have liked the Regina Pats to meet up with these Otters, Sea Dogs, and Spitfires.
Well, you'll see them next year.
Yeah, as host.
Yeah. So Ethan Bear, though, just to kind of retrace my thoughts here for a bit, he's a player that was really disappointing at the Memorial Cup, and we explained why, but he ages out of junior as well, so he'll be turning pro next year. So this is a kid that's got really tremendous upside. He had 28 goals and 70 points in the regular season, and it could be a short period of time before he's ready to transition and play on Edmonton's back end. And the last time I looked, they're kind of sorely needing a player that that can drive offense from the blue line. So it, you know, might not be too long, and he might be able to develop into you know, play Paul Coffey to Connor McDavid's Gretzky. He's only 31% Fantrax owned, so you might want to look into Ethan Bear.
Yeah, I really hope they don't rush him into the NHL. I hope they really look at if he's ready to be in the NHL, and they don't stunt his growth. Maybe like an Adam Larson got stunted in New Jersey. I hope that doesn't happen with Ethan Bear.
Yeah, because he could be a keeper. Speaking of keeping, let's wrap this segment up, and let's remind everybody the Keeping Carlson podcast is they're our friends from Dauber Hockey. They're sponsored by Dauber, and they are the best fantasy hockey podcast you're gonna find. It's hosted by Elon and Brian, so they talk about NHL. We talk about prospects. They've got you covered for the NHL guys. They have a lot of analytical slant on all of their takes, and they talk about players who they like, and they project and trends that they're seeing, and they do a really great job of backing up their opinions with analytical evidence. So they're in their summer season. You can become a patron of the show for only $1. That's their summer Patreon special, and your patronage not only supports a great show, but it gets you access to their exclusive Facebook page, and you can be in on their patron only podcasts, where you can interact with the hosts and pretty much dictate the flow of the show. So if you like fantasy hockey, and if you're listening to us, you do. If you don't already listen to Keeping Carlson, do yourself a favor, find them out on iTunes or SoundCloud, or you're looking to subscribe, give them a review, and hey, throw them $1 a month on Patreon. They're a great show, and they deserve your hard-earned dollar. All right, so let's take a break. When we come back, we are going to talk about the Dauber Fantasy Prospect Report.
Welcome back to segment 2 of the DPR show. We are going to talk about the 2017 Fantasy Prospects Report from Dauber Hockey. Peter, you are a big mainstay writer in this guide. Give us a breakdown of the Fantasy Prospect Report.
Sure, yeah. So my contribution to this guide is pretty much entirely 2017 draft eligible prospects, and there is a bunch of senior writers from Dauber Prospects that contribute to cover a lot of the other material in it. So you get things like the top 50 charts, where it's like kind of like our fantasy ranking, the draft entry, where we have a bunch of our writers and some media guys, and we do a consensus top first round for the draft. This is the top 50 charts. It's all the people that contribute to the guide rank their top 50 players who have never played a single NHL game, and you get the consensus, and you can compare that to Dauber's list individually, and you can see everyone else's overall rankings. It gives you a really great idea of what's coming outside the NHL. You got the top 25 goalies. Of course, you have team-by-team analysis of each team's top prospects, at least 10. It's like 10 to 15 prospect notes and profiles. So these are linked to the website. So you can go to Dauber Prospects and look up all these players for free. But the information you get in the prospect report is it's a little bit more gritty. It's a little bit more to the point in terms of your fantasy hockey decisions and where they are in their development. Each profile has the player's upside in terms of point range, their three-year potential, the certainty percentage of their making it to the NHL, their estimated arrival date, and then draft advice. So when do you want to take a player like this? Early, as soon as you can get them, don't draft them this year, put them on your radar, that kind of stuff. So it goes really in deep, team by team, with player by player. We also have a little section for the top unsigned players. You'll get a mock draft for the 2017 entry draft. And as I said, my contribution is the draft entry players. You get 100 of the top players profiled going into the 2017 draft, plus a whole bunch of fancy little charts like who's the best offensive defenseman, who's got the best shot, who's the best playmaker, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot more to it than that. So the guide itself is $13.99, and you can find that by clicking on Dauber Prospects, and on our top bar, there's a little shop button. You can find it in there. Of course, you probably already subscribed to the Dauber Fantasy Hockey Guide. That's $9.99, and you can get them both, the Keeper League Fantasy Hockey Pack, for a really great deal, $16.99. if you buy a magazine on the newsstand, they're at least $10, and some of them are pretty good. The Forecaster, I'm a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of McKean's, but you can't find that on newsstands anymore either. The Sportsnet one, you know, not so much. The Hockey News, again, not so good. But the Dauber Guide, and I don't contribute to the Dauber Guide, so, you know, I don't have a horse in the race, but I have it every year, and it's a must-have for your fantasy leagues. And both these guides, they're really great for your entry draft, but more than that, I use them as a season-long reference where I'll, you know, someone will come at me and offer me a trade, and you know, you and I are knee-deep in prospects, and we know a lot of the prospects from a lot of the leagues and all the teams, but there's a lot of guys in fantasy hockey that just, you know, who's got the time to cover all of the prospects in all of the different leagues across the world? So someone might be offering you a player that you've heard of, you know, Eric Cernak, for example, and you're like, oh yeah, I've heard of him. He was the guy in the Bishop trade. He's gone to Tampa. He must be good. He is good, but he doesn't have a lot of, you know, offensive upsides, so, or therefore fantasy value. So you get that kind of information really easily accessible. You buy the guide, put it on your phone. If you have an iPhone, you can save it in iBooks. It makes it very accessible. You don't have to go online. You don't have to go clicking through the team and scrolling through updates. It's just, bam, it's right there on your phone. It's very, very good. So yeah, I've contributed now this year and last year, but I've been using the prospect report personally since before I came on with Dauber Prospects. So, you know, I'm speaking as a customer as well. So it's a ringing endorsement for me. Do yourself a favor, do me the favor, and pick up a copy of the guide. And Paul, you've been reading it for longer than that too, I believe.
Yeah, I've been 2012. The prospect guide was my first prospect guide, and then, or the guide, sorry, was 2010. So 7 years. And then the prospect report, I've had since 2012. So it's been 5 years, and I have been a contributor in the past year. I did not contribute this year. I've been far too busy with everything going on in my life. And I'm covering the Vegas Golden Knights, so they don't really have much to go on there. But yeah, I'm a huge fan of the up, down, sideways, new arrows that are part of the prospect report. It shows how these guys have, if they've moved up, if they've moved down, if they're a new profile. It's really great. And like you said, the top 50 from all the writers and senior writers and Dauber himself and you, he has a great chart that breaks down Dauber one side, you on the other side, and then the consensus 50, and it's just an easy look at guys that you should be targeting in your early fantasy draft, your early fantasy drafts. That's one of the big key pieces that I really enjoy reading out over on the prospects report, and it's a huge prospect report, like almost 200 pages of just solid reading, and you could sit down and read it front to back in one sitting, or you can read it over time and read one full team or read only a couple players or guys that you already have on your prospect farm that maybe just want a second opinion and a second thought of a writer who's been following this guy for a year or 2 years or 3 years. Some of our writers have been following the same team since Dauber Prospects has been around, so they have a real big knowledge of their prospects, and I think that's what makes the prospect report so great is that second opinion look at guys that you may have your own opinion on. We all have opinions on our own players, but getting that second opinion just kind of either reassures you or makes you second guess or makes you look at something that maybe you missed when you were watching these guys in the junior ranks. And yeah, it's got a ton of information that I really do think you should invest in.
Yeah. And on the draft profiles as well, I give you a projection of where I see their upside point production being when they reach their prime in the NHL, and a player comparable for them too. It's a style comparison. So there's 100 players profiled just from the draft with projections of what kind of player they play like. So a lot of people put in a lot of work into this guide, so, you know, save yourself the time and the research and the hassle and just pick up the guide and take that shortcut to fantasy hockey victory.
Peter, I want to let all the guests know, all the listeners know, that they should be also listening to the Draft Analyst podcast. Steve Kornianos breaks down mock drafts. He's got his full mock draft, final mock draft, all seven rounds. That's going deep into prospect depth. And I really think everybody should give him a follow on Twitter, The Draft Analyst on Twitter, his website, thedraftanalyst.com. Steve Kornianos puts in the time, puts in the hours in front of the TV, in the rinks. Everybody should go and look him up on iTunes, The Draft Analyst podcast, and give this guy a follow. He puts in the time and effort. After the break, we will catch up with Adam Kuhlman.
Prospects Radio. I'm Peter Harling, and with me as always is Paul Swambag, and we are joined right now by Adam Kimmelman from NHL.com and one half of the excellent podcast DraftCast. Welcome to our show, Adam. Thanks for coming on.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys.
It's the NHL Draft Combine this weekend. You've been going to the Combine for the last few years now, and you'll be heading to Buffalo for the 2017 Draft Combine. Paul and I have never been to a draft combine before, as I'm sure the majority of our listeners have also never been. Can you give us a short overview of what it's all about, what kind of impact it can have on draft rankings, and how valuable this is to the NHL teams?
Well, I think the most valuable aspect of the combine is the interview process. So what's going on right now, and it started on Monday, is teams get to interview as many of the prospects as they want just to get a feel for who they are as people, you know, get to know them a little bit and know what kind of person you're drafting as well as what kind of player you're going to get. Now, the scouts have done their job, so you know what kind of player it's going to be, but now you get a chance to meet the kid, maybe potentially see how he fits on your team, how he might fit into your roster, what kind of a person he is. And then there's also the physical aspect of it. The players will be tested. They'll be measured in a number of off-ice activities, you know, rudimentary ones like bench press and pull-ups and grip strength, but they'll also be tested on, there's two stationary bike tests that everyone sort of has become familiar with if you've been around the combine. You know, they do get a little torturous, but one is the Wingate test, which measures a skater's explosiveness. There's also the VO2 max test, which measures a player's endurance. And there are different kinds of tests, and they really, they're tough for the players to get through. And while the scouts and the team will look at the results, they also like to see the players, how they handle it and how they fight through it. So I think it's, you know, if your scouts have done their homework, the combine is just another little ingredient to throw in the stew, and you get to meet the kids and see what kind of people they are as well as what kind of player they might be.
So this year's draft class, a lot of the talk has been Nico or Nolan, and Nolan Patrick has been suffering from injuries a little bit, and depends on whose draft list you look at, he could maybe have lost the grip on first place. Is it a safe statement to say that this scouting combine fitness testing is going to determine if he goes first or second, if he tests well physically and New Jersey is confident that he's fit as a fiddle and injuries aren't going to be an issue or not?
You know, I think, you know, my colleague Mike Morial is up there up there in Buffalo, and he already knows that he talked to the Devils. They have met with Nolan Patrick already, and he also talked to Paul Castron, the Devils scouting director, a couple of weeks ago. And the word is that, you know, they think that they've seen the injuries with Patrick. They know they're not chronic. It's one of those things where he just had an off year. Guys get hurt. And if they like the player, if they like what they've seen from him, you know, not just this season when he's been healthy, but last season when he was the MVP of the Western League playoffs, and he was had 100 points in the Western League last season, you know, and what he did as rookie of the year before that in the Western League, they know what kind of player he is. And if they think he's the best player available and the player that can help him the most, help them the most, they will draft him regardless of what he does with the fitness testing whenever he takes the test. I guess he takes the test on Saturday. So, you know, that's going to be the determining factor. If they have judged that his 3-year body of work is appropriate for being taken with the number one pick in the draft, they will draft him regardless of what happened this season. And if they think it's Nico Hischier, then Nico Hischier will be their pick, regardless of what, you know, the testing is. I mean, you know, like I said before, it's how the guy, not necessarily the on-paper results, it's how they fight through when it gets a little tough. It's all part of the, you know, learning what kind of player and person these guys are. That's what they're drafting. You're not drafting just a hockey player. You're drafting a guy who you want to fit and potentially lead your organization when you're making a first-round pick for potentially 10 or 15 years. So you got to know what kind of person and player you're getting. So if Nolan Patrick tests off the charts or he doesn't do anything, you know, interesting, I don't know if that's going to really sway them one way or the other. I think they have a good understanding of what kind of player he is. They're getting a good understanding of what kind of person he is. And it'll all go into the stew, and that'll be the determining factor if they take Nolan Patrick with the number one pick or if they opt to go for Nico Hischier or even somebody else that surprises us.
One of the bigger stories to come out of the combines in recent years was it's kind of comical, but it was Sam Bennett's inability to do a pull-up. Did that have any impact on his draft status?
Certainly not. He still went number four overall, and, you know, I don't think Calgary would have it any differently. They like what they've gotten out of Sam Bennett in the couple of years he's been in the NHL. He's become exactly sort of what they thought he would become, just a good physical power forward, a complimentary scorer. You know, and it's unfortunate that, you know, the fact that he couldn't do a pull-up got out. You know, I think what people overlooked is he's dealing with a shoulder injury, and, you know, it's hard to do a pull-up when you have a bum shoulder. Could he do them, you know, 2 weeks after the combine? Absolutely. I mean, I don't think the fact that he couldn't do a pull-up was embarrassing for Sam in the moment, but beyond that, I don't think that went into Calgary's thought process one iota when they were sitting there with the fourth pick deciding what they wanted to do. So that's what I mean. You know, it's not necessarily the results that matter in a lot of cases. It's will the kids, you know, will they give up or will they fight through it when they get a little adversity going against them or something they're not necessarily familiar with, or if they're hurting a little bit, will they at least try or will they just kind of run up the white flag? So, you know, in Sam's case, you know, it was unfortunate that, you know, you're doing the combine in front of a lot of media and people are watching and what the information that got out is what got out. But, you know, no, it hasn't affected him one iota in his NHL career.
Adam, are there any of the Memorial Cup participants this year that aren't going to be attending? I know in the past couple of years they've kind of sat out because they've played hockey up until 5 days before the combine. Are the guys like Mike DiPietro, Gabe Vilardi, Ivan Lodny, are they all attending this year?
They will all, as far as I know, they will all be at the combine. As far as whether they're going to test or not, that'll be determined by the medical testing, which I think takes place, you know, they kind of stagger it so there isn't like 100 kids waiting in line. But, you know, the medical testing will determine if they are able to do some, all, or none of the physical testing. And in the case of the guys who, you know, went through Memorial Cup, there is that understanding that, you know, guys are a little banged up. You know, they've played a lot of hockey. You know, in the case of, you know, a team like Erie, guys went, you know, 72 regular season games, another 20 games in the playoffs, plus another 4 or 5 games at the Memorial Cup. In Windsor's case, you know, they didn't have the long playoff run, but it's been a long season for those kids. So if anybody's dealing with bumps and bruises, you know, it doesn't get, let's just say it doesn't get held against them if they opt, you know, or if they're not cleared to do the physical testing. They will still be available to meet with the teams if teams want to speak to them.
What are some things that you're going to be looking for at the combine when you get there? Was there anything particular that you always try to determine? Does individual test results have a big bearing on scouts' opinions of players at all or anything like that?
I don't know if the results do, but I think they just like to see how the kids get through them. To me, I'm curious to see, there are a couple of kids that I'm just curious to see, you know, when you get the scouts all in one place, and now they've had an entire season to watch these guys, you know, 40, 50 viewings, what they really think of these players. And to me, a guy like Timothy Liljegren, the Swedish defenseman, is really an interesting case study for, you know, what do teams think of him? You know, here's a guy who started the season, you know, arguably as a top three candidate, who got sick, during the summer, had a really bad first half of the season, you know, whether he didn't have, where he wasn't healthy or he didn't have all of his energy back, whatever it was, he slid down, and, you know, in the rankings, and the opinions of him kind of slagged off a little bit. Then he sort of did better in the second half of the season, had a solid under 18s. What do teams think of him? You know, where does he fall on the spectrum? So, you know, he's a guy that I'm really curious to talk to a few scouts and see what they think of him. And there's a number of guys like that. You know, everybody talks about, you know, Nico and Nolan, or Nolan and Nico, whatever order you want to put them in at the top. But then there's a big clump of guys, you know, 7 to 10 guys who potentially could be, you know, under consideration for the 3, 4, and 5 spots. So, you know, it's going to be really interesting to see what teams think of that group of guys from, you know, whether it's a Gabe Vilardi or a Miro Heiskanen or Owen Tippett, see what teams think of all these guys. So it's one of the nice things about the combine. Everybody's all in one place. You don't have to make 100 phone calls. You just, you know, the guys are all kind of just sitting and watching, and they want to talk, and they love this. You get scouts talking about prospects, they are in heaven because they will talk your ear off. It's a great, the combine is a great event to go to. This will be my 10th one, and they're always interesting, fun, surprising, and a good time.
All right. So looking at some other players in this, in the upcoming draft, our show kind of has a fantasy hockey niche. I don't know if you participate in fantasy hockey or not at all, but in terms of people who are looking at picking prospects for their keeper pool and sort of like a points only format, I often see a lot of people looking at the NHL draft order and using that as their draft guide. And that can be erroneous when you pick a guy like Logan Stanley in the first round of your fantasy draft in a points only league. Are there any players that are projected to go in this year's first round that you think would be bad ideas for fantasy leagues?
Well, you know, obviously I don't play fantasy, but what I do know is if the guy's not in the NHL, you can't really do much with him. So I look at this year's draft and I really see Nolan Patrick and Nico Hischier really having the best opportunities to, at age 18, make their teams. You know, there might be one or two other guys that have a chance to, you know, stick with their team past opening day, but to me, Hischier and Patrick are the most fantasy. If you're looking at fantasy, I think those are two guys that are ready to make contributions to an NHL team from opening day. Beyond that, I look at a guy like Owen Tippett or maybe Gabe Vilardi, who will have a chance to make their opening night rosters. Michael Rasmussen is a guy I've watched and really been impressed by just because of that big body and the way he skates, and he's such a natural goal scorer. You know, those are guys that I would look to, you know, if I'm drafting for this season and beyond, those are guys that maybe I would keep an eye on. But if you're drafting strictly for this week, for this season, Patrick and Hischier really are the only two guys I could see legitimately making the NHL and sticking and being productive this season.
Okay. This is I think it's a good draft for goaltenders. I think there's a number of goalies, up to about probably 10, that have a shot at not only making it to the NHL, but making an impact in the NHL. What's your take on this year's goaltender depth, and who do you rank at or near the top of the rankings for goalies?
Well, I think having a chance to watch Jake Oettinger this season, you know, starting every game for a really good BU team, getting them to the NCAA tournament, you know, speaks very highly of him and his abilities and what he's capable of doing, you know, moving forward. He's going to have at least one more season at college to kind of improve and grow his game even further. But he's a guy who I think definitely has a chance to make an impact at the next level. Michael DiPietro is another guy who, you know, you've gotten a chance to see high-level games in the Ontario League playoffs, high-level games at the Memorial Cup. That speaks very highly of what he's able to do and the kind of goaltender he potentially looks to be. You know, I haven't had a chance to see the Finnish goaltender, Luukkonen, but I've heard wonderful things about him from scouts who were very high on him. You know, I think it's a very good year for goaltenders. And there's one other guy I want to mention, only because I know his father, Caden Primo. You know, he's a guy that, you know, I'm sure I saw him, you know, banging around the locker room when Keith was a player because I covered the Flyers way back when. And, you know, now knowing that Caden's one step from reaching, you know, being drafted into the NHL, it makes me feel old, but I'm very happy for Keith and his wife and his family to know that Caden's succeeding the way he's succeeding. He's probably going to get drafted, you know, hopefully in the top 4 rounds somewhere.
Yeah, you mentioned Ottinger and DiPietro. Do you think Ottinger has the pressure on going into the combine because DiPietro just came out of the Memorial Cup a champion?
No, not really, because I don't think that, you know, I think the kids today, either themselves or through their agents, are smart enough to know that what happens at the combine and what happens on draft day are just two little snapshots in what they hope is a very long, fruitful career. You know, and there's a lot of stories of guys who got drafted in the first round and didn't make it, and guys like Craig Anderson or Brian Elliott or Pekka Rinne, who were sixth or seventh round picks, who, you know, Pekka Rinne's in the Stanley Cup final. So it's a really – it's a difficult position to grade. It's a difficult position to scout. It's a difficult position to develop. So guys are smart enough to know that just because I get picked first round, second round, third round, doesn't really have a whole lot of bearing on their ability to make the NHL or not. It's what they do from the draft, from draft day forward, that really will determine what they do. So those guys know that. They're smart kids. You know, I've had the chance to be around Ottinger a lot going back to the World Junior Camp in August. I kind of have a feel on what kind of kid he is. He's not going to let that really faze him one way or the other. I think they see that right now as opportunities to introduce themselves to teams, show teams who they are, what they're capable, the kind of people they're capable of being. And, you know, whether they go first round, second round, third round, I don't know if that really affects them one way or the other. Obviously, it would be nice to hear their name call Friday night and to be able to be part, have that, you know, follow them around. But at the end of the day, those guys know exactly what the draft means.
Hey, Adam, what's maybe one or two players in this year's draft who aren't projected to go in as early as the first round, but for one reason or another, you're really high on them and you're you know, anxious to see if they get drafted or how high they possibly get drafted. Who are some of your favorites or sleepers for the 17 draft?
Kyle Yamamoto from Spokane is a guy I've gotten a chance to see, you know, again, going back to the summer, saw him at the USA Prospects game in Philadelphia in September. Just such a fun, dynamic player to watch. Smart, skilled, and even though he's only, you know, 5'7" and 160 pounds, he's completely fearless out there. And he's a guy that I could see him going anywhere from the top 15 to the middle of the second round, depending on what teams think of him. And you know, if he's able to play the way he plays at the pro level, you know, we've seen it with Patrick Kane. We've seen it with Johnny Gaudreau. Players of smaller stature have, you know, real success. And from what I've seen, I think Yamamoto is a guy who could be in that mold. But, you know, it's a matter of what the NHL teams see. And he's a guy I'm definitely curious to see how he does, what teams think of him at the combine, and how he does, where he ends up getting picked at the draft.
As far as defensemen go, Adam, who do you think is number one? Is it Miro Heiskanen? Is it Timothy Liljegren? Is it Cale Makar? Who do you think is the number one defenseman?
Well, I think the way, you know, from what I've heard and read from the scouts, they seem very high on Heiskanen. You know, just a guy, you know, smart, skilled. He played a full season in Liga, the top league in Finland, at, you know, 17 years old. That speaks very highly of him. You know, the only issue with Cale Makar, who I think, you know, has a chance to be a real good player, is how does his skill level and his game, you know, from the Alberta League, how does that replicate if you put him against a kid from the Western League or from the Ontario League or from playing in the Swedish Hockey League or the top league in Finland? How do you compare and contrast? That's a difficult thing to do, because Makar was showed himself to be a real dynamic offensive player. But what can he do? How would he have done if he was playing in Medicine Hat, say, instead of Brooks? So it's going to be interesting to see. You know, he's the kind of guy that could be a little polarizing just because how much value the teams put on, you know, those junior B kind of leagues and the kind of gaudy numbers he put up. Now, we saw Tyson Jost and Dante Fabbro in the BCHL league come out of Penticton to be first-round draft picks, who were considered, you know, top prospects by their teams. So can Cale Makar be that same kind of player, or teams going to sort of, you know, be a little more conservative when it comes to him, and maybe he'll slip down the rankings a little, slip down the draft board a little bit? I'm very curious to see, you know, what the scouts think of him. So you know, there's a lot of, you know, it seems like Heiskanen and Makar are the top two guys right now. But behind them, you look at guys like Nick Hague from Mississauga, Cal Foote from Kelowna, Liljegren, who we talked about before, and I know there's a couple of guys who I'm forgetting, but there are some real nice skilled defensemen. I think what we've kind of gotten away from the last 2 years is we've been spoiled, right? You know, you look at Austin Matthews and Patrick Laine, and you look at Connor McDavid and Jack Eichel, and you see these generational talents year after year, and you think every draft's going to be like that, and every prospect is going to be a superstar for you if you take him in the, you know, top 15, top 20. Doesn't always work like that. So there's a lot more question marks. I think this year's draft is going to be a good draft, you know, positionally. 5 years from now, we'll look back and say, you know, there are some pretty good players who were pretty good contributors to their NHL teams. I don't, you know, obviously there's no Connor McDavid coming out of this year's draft, but I don't think you're not going to get that every year. I think we've been spoiled. But I think there's some real nice players coming out, defensemen included.
All right, Adam. Thanks a lot for all your insight. You can find Adam on Twitter at NHLAdamK. Thanks again for joining us, and hopefully we see you at the draft in Chicago.
Absolutely, guys.
Thanks to Adam Killeman from the DraftCast podcast, taking us through the Scouting Combine weekend and giving us some insight into what to watch for and how important test results and interviews are for scouts and general managers of NHL teams. He also gave us a glimpse into the NHL draft and what could happen at the draft and some guys to watch for in the late first and second rounds. Only 23 days away from the NHL draft. Can't wait to be a part of it in Chicago. Really looking forward to bringing you guys some excellent content from the draft. We also can't forget to thank you, the listener, for tuning in as well and giving us a review. If you haven't done a review yet, please take a few minutes to rate and review us. You wouldn't believe how much a few great reviews will help us. Please also make sure to give us a follow on Twitter at @DPR_show. You can also follow our personal accounts at Zwambag, Zwambag, and at P Harling, Pharling. That's it for now. Talk to you soon, Peter.
Cheers.